is the Rebel Author Podcast, where we talk about books, business, and occasionally bad words. Hello, Rebels, and welcome to episode 232 of the Rebel Author Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Kate Rundy from Podium, and we're going to be talking all about audiobook publishing in 2024. And in a spot of good timing, my second fiction audiobook, has just released, A Game of Romance and Ruin, and so I will be putting a little sneaky clip at the end of the episode, so listen out for that. Had a couple of comments on Dana's episode. So Chris said, I also struggle in that transition from marketing the previous book to starting the new one. My husband always says to give ourselves grace when we start or restart a new project. In brackets, I know, how dare he? Indeed, how dare he? He suggests in project planning to have a ramp up period at the start, aiming for way lower levels of productivity. That way, if our brain fumbles or we're slow to get going, we're not late or behind, and it takes the pressure off and allows for more creative juices and joy to flow. I love that. I think that will be one of those things that's slightly harder to put into practice for me. But I do like it, and I might have to try. I think Pacemaker, certainly on the writing, Pacemaker is a good software option to help you like set those rising like word count targets. I'm not sure. I know of a bit of software that does that for the like all the bits around it, the production and outlining and stuff. Okay, Carrie said, I love this episode. I'm putting my first queer relationship in the third book of my series, and this episode had some great tips as I don't have any experience with that. Also, for good measure, I got the audiobook of The First Girl Games. Oh, well, I hope you enjoy it. That is quite the experience for your first book. So in personal news and updates then, as this goes out, I will be packing my bag for Seville. I am off to 20 Books Seville on next week, and then I come back from 20 Books Seville on Saturday the 9th of March, and then it's my birthday on the 10th, and then I'm in London the 11th, 12th and 13th of March for London Book Fair. So I'm on an Amazon panel. I'm speaking at another, I think, the Writers' Summit. And then I am spending the 12th in London with my wife for a little birthday treat day. And then I've got various dinners, meeting my agent, various things like that. So it's going to be absolutely crazy for the next 10 days. And in between now and then, I need to do my Seville presentation. I've got to do all the ordering for Kickstarter because Kickstarter closes tomorrow as I record. So today is Wednesday, February the 28th, and the Kickstarter closes at 5 o'clock tomorrow. So I'm going to do the big bulk ordering tomorrow evening. I know I don't get the money in until the 14th, but and I know there'll be drop-offs, but I'm just going to do, you know, a loose rough amount and make sure that I have more than enough for all of the bits that go inside the boxes. And then once all of that is finalized, what happens then? Oh, yeah. So I also need to finish writing the spicy bonus scenes. So that is this week. I need to narrate them. I'm going to try and do that before I go to Seville. I'd really like to. And this is all aside from the fact that I still haven't finished the outline for books 2 and 3, of which I need to write them basically before the end of May. So things are starting to feel a little tight again. I have had to say no to a number of things, a shocking number of things. And the reason I tell you it's shocking, so here's what I've actually had to do. So you guys all know my writing sprint partner, Cara, and I now send Cara all of the invitations that I get. And she is my barrier because I basically gave her a set of criteria and was like, look, unless it's this, 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 and this, I can't do it because I want to write for the next 4 months and try and write 4 books in 4 months, essentially, or I should say 3 books and a novella. And I can't do that if I keep picking up speaking gigs and this gigs and that things and so on and so forth. So she is reminding me at every opportunity when I'm going, oh, but I would really like to. And she's like, no. And I have asked her to do this. So thank you so much, Cara, for keeping me on track, because it's actually been really enlightening going through this process. I have like no awareness of my excessive ability to say yes. And it's only in having somebody else tell me no, who I've given permission to say no, but telling me to say no is sort of reminding me how many times I say yes. And then I wonder why I don't have enough time to write. So this has been a really good process for me. It's not going to be no forever. It's just literally no until I'm back from New Zealand, because I really desperately want to get these books written so that I can have books in the bank. My goal for this year is basically to write 6 books, but only release 4. And so then I have 3 in the bank, because the one that I'm releasing today was written last year. So that should put me really like 6 months ahead for next year, which means that, you know, I can be a bit kinder to I can be kind to myself anyway, but, you know, I will find it easier to be kinder to myself if I need a day off or if I want to read for the afternoon, because I already know that I have the books in the bank and I know that I've got a consistent publishing schedule. So this is essentially what I'm trying to do and why I've got this period of saying no. And I have to be honest, it's really hard for me. I am finding it really difficult. Like psychologically, there's a lot of fear around, well, if I say no, will I never get another opportunity again? But it's not true. And I know it's not true because more things keep coming through the door. And it is, and I am very clear when I say no as well, that it is only temporary. I don't think I've ever given myself that permission to prioritize the thing that I really want to do. I just like try and please everybody all of the time. And that's a horrible pill to swallow when I also love being a rebel. You know, like I try and please everybody, but also say, like, try and break the rules at the same time. I'm a juxtaposition, okay? Anyway. So that is pretty much a summary of what I am up to. If you're going to Seville or you're going to be at London Book Fair, please do tell me. And I think that is it from me this week. Do listen out, because at the end of this episode, I'm including a clip from the new audiobook, A Game of Romance and Ruin, which has just released last week. So listen out for that. The rebel of the week this week is Don, and Don mentions 2 things. So Don says the headline on the CNN article that he sent in is British Zoo has new plan to rehabilitate potty-mouthed parrots, which is absolutely brilliant because I did see this article. I can't read it out for copyright reasons, but I'm going to link to it because it's absolutely fucking hilarious and very in keeping. Okay, so Don's Rebellion says, the story reminds me of a family story, and maybe this fits the rebellion. Our oldest son died 6 years ago at the age of 32. Oh. When he was about 3 years old, he was riding in the rocket seat in the back seat of the car with me and his mother, my now late ex-wife, when we passed a Dairy Queen. He pointed and said, ice cream, ice cream. Not a typo, that was how he talked. We were late getting somewhere, so I said, no, sorry, Barry, we don't have time to stop. He sighed really big and said, shit. Since we live in American South, it actually came out as shit. His mother and I looked at each other in shock and burst out laughing, and that just encouraged him. He said, I say it, she it. He, he, he. Shit, 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 shit. We were seized with laughter. But then she looked at me and said, he's riding around it with you in traffic, hasn't he? He's been riding around with you in traffic, hasn't he? Somehow, it was always my fault. And no doubt, that really was. But I'm not sure whose rebellion that was, mine or his, but there it lies. Oh, what a wonderful story. And I am so sorry for your loss. I know there's nothing really that I can say, but what a wonderful story and a happy memory as well. Okay, we are super, super low on stories. I know I feel like I am perpetually saying this, but it is true. We are very, very low on stories, and it is my favourite segment. So if you have been sat on a story and you would like to send it in, please do. You can send it to Becca over on rebelauthorpodcast@gmail.com. Two new patrons this week. Welcome and a big thank you to Melissa L. Story and Ruth Noble. And of course, an enormous thank you to all of my existing patrons. If you would like to support the show and get early access to all of the episodes, as well as bonus content like tonight's Poison and Prose session, where we will jump on a Zoom, you'll ask me questions, and we will do writing sprints together, then you can. We also have the Slack community group where we help and support each other. There's over 100 authors in there now. We have the masterclasses, we have the movie nights, and a whole bunch of other bits and bobs. Then you can do that from as little as $2 a month by visiting patreon.com/Sasha Black. So this week I am welcoming a brand new podcast sponsor. This week, the sponsor of the show is Fictionary. Fictionary is a piece of software that is brilliant at helping you systematically work through your edit. The software works well on its own, but if you want to guarantee your success, then Storyteller Premium users also get access to the Fictionary Live area, which has guided editing courses. There is also an amazing certified story coach program, of which I was their first certified story coach editor. Yes, I was. There, obviously, you'll go through an enormous training course to certify you to become a professional editor. But rather than me tell you all about why I love Fictionary, I am going to let Amy tell you all about why she loves Fictionary. But before I do that, listeners of the podcast can get 25% off Storyteller and Storyteller Premium and the certification with the code REBEL25. So if you have been thinking about becoming an editor, or if you would like help with your edits, then check out Fictionary. All of the links are in the show notes, and use the code REBEL25.
Hello, I'm Amy Sund, editor at Redleaf Word Services. Now that your first draft is done, it's time to focus on the big picture elements of your story. Here's where Fictionary can help. Fictionary can track over 30 structural elements per scene. You heard that right, per scene. It presents these elements in graphs, charts, and color-coded diagrams. It's a fantastic way to pick out weak spots or holes in your story's structure, especially for visual learners. Fictionary is one of the tools I most often suggest to my manuscript evaluation clients. I've used it in my own writing for refining scenes, smoothing out transitions, and seeing where I need to focus my attention. A 14-day free trial is available for new users, perfect for plugging in a short story to see what comes up. Founder Christina Stanley has built a thriving community around the software that is supportive, social, and educational. Come join us and see how Fictionary can help you craft a novel your readers will love.
Okay, that's it from me this week. Let's get on with the episode.
Hello and welcome to the Rebel Author Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Kate Rundy. Kate has worked in publishing for 20 years. She is the VP of Acquisitions at Podium. She was previously a Director of Publicity at Penguin Random House. Hello and welcome.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
No, thank you for coming on. I don't think I've ever spoken to anybody from Podium, or in fact, any kind of huge publishing monster, I want to call it. So I'm super excited to have you on. Like, really, I was like, oh, well, I can't believe you said yes. So thank you.
Absolutely.
Would you like to tell everyone a little bit about your journey? Like, tell me about kind of your trajectory, what it was like sort of at Penguin Random House, how you ended up at Podium, and maybe a little bit about your own personal audio tastes.
Absolutely. So I was, you know, your typical book nerd who read and read and read and got in trouble for having the flashlight under the sheets at night, couldn't stop reading, and inevitably studied English in college, and applied for internships in publishing and knew it was something I'd always been really passionate about, and ended up interning at Penguin Random House back when it was still just Random House. Ended up with an informational interview with my former boss, who was on the publicity side, and he said, "You're way too fun to be stuck in a back room. You need to come work in publicity." So that's what I did for 15 years, and I then worked on the media and events and campaigns for, huge Nobel, Pulitzer, National Book Award winners, celebrities, and then sort of set up, any of their general travel for their events, thought about how to reach the largest audiences for people, kind of really got a real education in how the sausage is made in very traditional publishing, the most traditional of traditional publishing. I was on the Knopf Doubleday side, where people still wear, tweed jackets with elbow patches and carry suitcases to work. So really really got the most traditional of publishing background educations. In 2019, I kind of had this redesign my life moment with my husband and my children, where we decided to move to Boston to be closer to family, and they were starting elementary school, and so it was kind of this moment we tried to take advantage of and be closer. And a former Random House colleague of mine, Victoria Gherkin, who's now Podium's publisher, said, "Oh, there's this, little audiobook startup. We're just a small merry band, and we mostly do sci-fi, but I know that you know audience, and we need somebody who knows audience, and we think this would be a great fit for you, and you should come aboard." And 4.5 years later, here we are. And it was, when I joined, probably a 10-person company, and now we're just about 60. So,
Wowza. Yeah, it is a behemoth in the industry now.
it was really quite tiny when I joined. It's really been amazing. To your question about audio, I mean, it's just been this enormous, revolution. I think COVID, I think, really expedited the amount of people who kind of wanted to move away from screens and needed that break, but also didn't necessarily have time to dedicate their eyes to a Kindle or to the page. And so they could garden or run or do laundry or drive or commute or just, stand in the shower and listen to their favorite writing. And so it's really been a huge change. And I, the New York Times had a piece about audiobooks 2 days ago, and it's something like audiobook sector grew 28% in the last year. So really, it's been about 20% year-over-year growth for the last several years. So it's been quite a fun ride to be a part of. And it's really been exciting. So
So before we sort of dive into audio, what are like your biggest takeaways from your time in trad? Like, let's focus on the audience side. Like, what do you see maybe indies not doing that trad did do that could be like a good, yeah, I don't know, anything about audience that you kind of took from trad?
Yeah, I mean, I think to honestly, now trad is honestly following indies. They are saying, "What's happening on TikTok? This is exciting." And
Oh my God,
I
TikTok's
was
changed my life.
I mean, I was at the Frankfurt Book Fair, in 2022, and I remember the head of PW Daily, which is Publishers Weekly's daily show paper that they give out to everyone, was, "What is romanticy?" It
Oh my
was,
God.
obviously, we have been in the space, indies have been in the space for years, but it was traditional publishing kind of waking up and saying, "What is this happening over here?" But yeah, I mean, I think trad does a lot of things really, really well, right? I mean, they do fabulous distribution, they work beautifully with independent brick and mortar stores. They have really dedicated, incredibly hardworking, passionate individuals who are really trying to get the good word out about so many books. And I think part of the problem is that, there's just so many books and so little time, and everybody's kind of trying to make everything work on a shoestring. And sometimes it really works, and sometimes it doesn't. I think I love all my former colleagues. Everybody is just, so good at what they do and so talented. But I think, some of my biggest takeaways were that trying to make things work the way maybe they worked in the 1990s, is not a great business model. So, I think what has been so exciting about working with indie authors and working at Podium is that, we can really move quickly and with a lot of agility to, change our trajectory, change our strategy. Instead of saying, we've always done it one way, and so we're going to keep doing it that way because that is what has always worked, which I think a lot of traditional publishing can get a little stuck in.
I was listening to Joanna Penn's podcast the other day, and I can't remember who she was talking to. I feel like it was Paddy Finn, who's a Kickstarter chap who also writes. It may not have been, so I could be misattributing here. But he said it shouldn't be survival of the fittest anymore, but survival of the most adaptable. And I literally stopped dead what I was doing, and I was like, "Oh my God, that is fantastic!" Like, and I think that never has a truer truism been said. Especially for the indie sort of arena. I mean, that those who make it to the top are the ones who adapt.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things I love most about the indie community, and I know something that you do, is that you use different pen names for different genres. And I think that a lot of traditional authors get really stuck because they say, this is my brand, this is my identity. I want to experiment in mystery, and but I also write very literary novels. But then I also write how nonfiction books about, whatever strikes my fancy. And then it really kind of convolutes in a lot of ways that kind of voracious reading audience if they're only there for the mysteries, and then they're kind of like, oh, I don't really know, I don't like this nonfiction stuff. It kind of bifurcates the audience. Whereas if you say, I'm going to have this pen name for my mysteries and this pen name for my spicy romance and this pen name for my clean hockey romance or whatever it is, I think not only does it help from an Amazon perspective with your algorithm and your also bots, but it also kind of keeps those particular audiences getting exactly what they're looking for. And I think that that is hugely smart by the indie community. I mean, I've just been amazed at how really, like you said, adaptable, agile, and just flexible that they can be. And then they can say, I don't love this cover. I'm going to switch it out and I'm going to not be married to it. Whereas in very traditional publishing, people, it's very hard to, especially with print, where they have a huge inventory, warehouse full of inventory with that one cover. It's really kind of hard to turn the oil tanker around and kind of change directions quickly. So,
Well, and talking of print, you look at audiobooks. Oh my goodness me, we don't even have physical audiobooks anymore. Like,
I
that's the
know.
strangest thing, you know? So, obviously, Podium are working with me with the Ruby books, but actually, they're just digital
Yeah. And I mean, it's funny,
things.
we occasionally get the question of, well, what about physical CDs? And I always say, do you know anybody who has a physical CD player in their house, in their car? I don't.
Exactly. Like what? I don't even think I have a CD player in the house. I had to buy a plug-in DVD player for my Mac Mini because I wanted to re-watch a film, which for research for a book. And I was like, what? Fuck, I literally got nothing to watch it on. So I had to purposefully buy this like USB DVD drive. And I was like, what even is this one? My son, like the other day, we were talking about cassettes, and my son was like, what's a cassette? And I was like, oh my
Oh my
God.
God.
Stop it. Stop it. Go
I
away.
got some mixtapes from the 90s to
Do you
show.
remember when we used to actually make those for people? It was so romantic.
Oh yeah, it was. It was the ultimate love gesture. It was so nice.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's so great.
Okay, well, so we have heard the wonderful news about audio growing year on year. I know that Jane Friedman reports that in the Hot Sheet. She often, has the stats and things, and it's in Publishers Weekly and, the bookseller and the like. But it's not at complete saturation yet. So for those people who maybe are sat on the fence, very, very bonded to physical books, perhaps, or maybe they're completely entrenched in ebooks now, like why is audio important? Do you have any listening stats or anything exciting? Like, why should people try audio in 2024?
Such a great question. I mean, honestly, for authors, if you are not publishing an audio, you are leaving money on the table. There are almost no authors I know who don't say, my fans have been harassing me. When is the audio coming? When is the audio coming? And a lot of true, devoted ebook readers love to use WhisperSync, but also love to sometimes just have own outright their audio edition so that they can like take it with them in the car, take it with them when they go for a jog, and they just, especially because, you know, we work with some of the most absolutely talented voice actors in the world, who completely elevate the story and take it to a whole new place. There are so many examples of this, but I mean, it's really, you know, it really kind of changes the consumer experience in terms of you can have one vision of it in your mind, and then you hand it over to a professional voice actor, and then suddenly it takes you to an entirely new place, and it's really exciting. And in terms of stats, I mean, I don't have exact stats of how many audiobook listeners there are in the world, but it's growing exponentially. And it's really been exciting too, because we're, you know, moving international as well. We're working with a number of sub agents, and we'll be selling rights for some of our titles at the London Book Fair. So there, the international markets are really waking up too very quickly to audio. It's obviously been huge in Germany and Poland thus far, but it's really blowing up in places like Brazil and Korea. So we're very, very excited to see where it goes. And I just think too, you know, from an author perspective, you know, you want to reach the most audiences where they are. And a lot of readers literally just spend their time on, you know, the Audible website or on Spotify. And so they want to have that opportunity to reach those people who are not necessarily just looking in Kindle Unlimited or just looking in those places for their next read. So I think getting into those places is very wise for any author.
I have to say, I have been very surprised. So I have a vampire romance on pre-order at the moment. And usually the most frequent question is, when's the paperback pre-order coming? When's the paperback pre-order coming? And this time, for the first time ever, the most frequent question I have is this going to be an audio? Is this going to be an audio? I've been astonished at that shift. I really didn't expect that. Like, but it is without exception the most common question that I get asked, and it's really surprising. I don't know if that's limited to TikTok, because so much of my audience comes from TikTok.
Yeah.
Usually TikTok is very paperback based, so I am unlike other indie authors in that more than 50% of my income comes from physical copies, but that is because of TikTok, because I drive so much marketing there. But I actually think TikTok is probably paper and then audio in
Yeah.
terms of the order in which they read, which is astonishing, really, that it's kind of taken over ebooks, which I think is amazing.
It's so
So.
they're so right, and you're right that TikTok is a very visual medium. But we now more than ever are getting requests from our authors before books are going on sale. Hey, there's this part in the book where my beta readers keep highlighting this one super spicy part. Can you have your engineers cut this one little section? Because I was like, you know, totally blushing when I was listening to my early MP3s of having when the narrator read it. Can you cut this one part so I can use it in a TikTok? And we have seen massive growth
So
from that.
I'm literally just about to do that with the Hearts and Heist files, because
Yes.
everybody loves the line, "Hello, my angry girl." Like, it's literally without exception, everyone goes feral for it. So I'm like,
Yes.
oh, I need to do that. But yeah,
Totally.
but yeah,
I
yeah.
mean, one good example of this, Kate Stewart, who's one of our romance authors that we work with, she there was a line in one of her books from the Ravenhood series. It was like, we love rainy days, don't we, pup? And it was literally all over TikTok. So much so, people were getting tattoos about it. People were like completely going nuts of just listening to this. And I mean, it was its own thing without any picture of a book at all. So I think people are kind of leaning into that and just kind of that, especially with that really spicy stuff. That has really been interesting to watch for sure.
Number one, somebody having a tattoo of my words is like ultimate life goal. But number two, let's just talk about that. Why do you think that, or like the either the quote or the audio play is creating such like feral kind of intensity on these social medias. Like, what is it, do you think, that creates that kind of community or that own, like, reader ownership over words? Like, yeah, I don't know if you have any just blue sky thoughts about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the aural experience is so different than the visual experience, is so different than the self-visualization experience when you are reading a book and it's like you can sort of get the characters in your head. And then when you see the movie adaptation, you're like, oh, now that actor is sort of, I see their face. But then when you hear the words, it activates, I think, a totally different part of your brain because it kind of has to, you kind of then have to use all parts of it, right? You're saying like, okay, now I kind of see what they look like, or I kind of smell, or like the pause, the pregnant pauses, or the breathiness of this moment has like kind of just really heightened where that readership has gone. And I think that that makes a huge difference. I mean, and that goes across genre, right? Because I think, reading it on the page and saying, he yelled or she gasped or he paused, like really great narrators know how to just build that drama. And it just kind of takes it to a totally new place.
Yeah, it does. Like, I was listening yesterday to some of the new files, and one of the characters is super sarcastic, and the narrator just got it. And I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. So,
I
yeah, like,
love it.
it really does elevate the story. And I think there's a closeness when it's in your ears and it's sort of feeding into your brain from your ear holes. There's like an
Totally.
intimacy that there isn't when you're reading it with your eyes. So,
Yeah.
yeah, I don't know. I love an audiobook. So, yeah, I usually actually have an ebook, a paperback, and an audio on the go at the same time, and all three are different.
Totally. I mean, I personally, like I tend to read genre fiction and nonfiction audio. And then there's like, if I'm really like a really heavy, big literary fiction, I kind of sometimes just need the paper to kind of be able to really flip back and forth and look at the family tree. Like if I'm reading, George R. R. Martin or something, and I need to like look at the maps, and I need, that's the kind of moment where I kind of still want that really paper experience. But yeah, I mean, I think especially for genre fiction, I just find it to work so well for audio because it's just really propulsive. The plot drives it forward, and you just want to get sucked into the world. And it's a really great way. Like you said, you get your earphones on, and suddenly you're just everything else is gone, and you're just in there. So it's a really really great medium for that.
Well, Podium is clearly cutting edge. So let's talk about the future, because you guys, are producing a phenomenal amount of audio at the moment. I'm on your newsletter, and I was literally jaw dropped at the number of authors you'd taken on, and that's like every month as well, which is crazy. So you guys must have your fingers on the pulse of like what is selling, what is working. So like,
Yep.
what genres or tropes or trends are you seeing, or do you think are coming on, are kind of on the horizon for 2024 and beyond?
Yeah, I mean, dark romance has just been unbelievably successful. Sports romance, hockey romance obviously continues. But we've seen like new sports. So we're expecting a lot of F1 romance this year. And we've seen like an uptick in some baseball, some hockey, some football, some basketball. But we also we love seeing really amazing body positivity romance. We've been seeing a lot of biracial romance. We've been seeing just a really and tons of LGBTQ plus romance, which has been so exciting. And we have lots and lots of great authors who are now doing duet narration when the text calls for it. It's been very, very exciting to see that happen because that's a totally different element. And I would say too, we what else? We've been seeing a lot of cozy fantasy, tons and tons and tons of cozy fantasy. That has really worked very well. Our roots are very much in sci-fi and fantasy. So I think that has been, something that we've watched very, very closely. We also work very much in lit RPG, so lit role player game fiction. And that has been an enormous success story for us. Really, it's funny. It's like, the demographic is, just people who love great books, but also coders and truckers and people who want like long form, where they just want to like put their headphones on and get into the world and get in the zone. And they really, really have reacted well to it. And it's just really been, that's been exciting. I'm trying to think of other tropes we're
I
seeing.
have a question. So, do you find that audiobook trends follow exactly like the ebook and paperback trends, or do you ever see audio trends that are different or perhaps not necessarily, slightly more niche outside of the normal air quote charts?
Yeah, that's really a great question. So, for example, here's a perfect example: Westerns. There is a crazy ebook Western audience, and we publish some of them in audio too. We have not seen that same transition into audio yet. We know it's coming, but we know it's sort of an older readership that really loves it, and they just, you'll see it in the top 100 in Kindle, totally performing. They're making, six figures, seven figures a year in ebook. And yet in audio, it's been a slower start. And I think a lot of that too is just the older demographic hasn't necessarily yet made that transition from their Kindles. But we know it'll happen because people have been converting every single year. So we're open to that. And like we sometimes cozy mysteries, not as much so in audio. I think a lot of the really short stuff, unless you're a huge author, not a lot of people want to spend an Audible credit on an audiobook where they might read a 2 hour long, under 2 hour long ebook. I think that those are some examples of that. But for the most part, I'd say it's pretty genre agnostic in terms of people who are now audio listeners.
Those 2 hour reads just need to be bundled and then it will be okay.
There you go. That's it. That's the
Just
answer.
bundle them.
Yeah.
If you've got 5 of those short reads, all of a sudden you've got a 10 hour audiobook and then people will buy them.
That's what we do. That's we do that all the time. So.
Okay. So kind of a similar question. What trends are kind of you are you seeing or kind of do you foresee in the industry in terms of technology or consumer behavior? Like Spotify has sort of shifted behavior, I think, a little bit already because it's not the one credit for one book. It's sort of you can do little bits here and there. Do you have any thoughts about the future in terms of the tech or what you think might be coming at all?
Yeah, I mean, I think any new player entering the audio space is exciting, right? Because it just means more ears for listening. Our current default is to be exclusive with Audible. That is something that, but we're always, paying attention to what's happening in the space. And for us right now, we're always thinking about, how to bring the most revenue to our authors and our author partners. So, we want to think about, where that is. And I think Spotify is doing something exciting. I mean, they get your usership, get the usership gets 15 hours free. Whether or not they then continue on is another question. So I think it's definitely something we've been watching closely, but I think more than anything, it's just exciting for the industry that people are entering the space and that more people are kind of getting access and exposure to the medium where they might not have kind of committed to an Audible membership or done so before. But I think it was interesting. I think the Britney Spears memoir has been the most listened to on Spotify, which kind of makes sense, right? Because it's a real music listenership and she's got millions of people who listen to her. So I think any way we can get people into accessing audiobooks is exciting. So that's something that we've been really closely paying attention to. And I think it just means more listeners and more readers moving in that medium. So it's exciting for us.
Okay, let's talk about Podium. For indie authors who are listening, who may be slightly newer or don't necessarily know how these things work, how does Podium work with indie authors? Is there a way to pitch? Does it all go through agents? Do you guys pitch? Like, how does it work? And then, sort of, the part B to that is what are you looking for when deciding which authors to work with?
Great question. So, it happens in a number of ways. The first is we are very outward looking and paying very close attention to what's happening in specific genres. So, We also use some proprietary technology to help us, pay attention to what's going on as well. So we also are looking at what's happening in the marketplace and what's really taking off, whether it's because it's happening on TikTok or because somebody in your also bots is suddenly really performing. We also have a team who's very closely paying attention to Discord and Reddit and the author groups and Goodreads and kind of looking at that fan reaction so we can quickly go and talk to those people and tell them why they should have an audiobook. We also work with tons and tons of agents. And a lot of agents now are repping indie authors and for specific rights, not all rights. So some agents only represent their audio rights or their foreign rights, or some agents only represent their film rights or other different rights. Traditionally, some agents have said, I need to represent all your rights, and you have to give me 15% of your ebooks. And indies now, I've seen more and more say, I'm going to handle my ebook, MKU. Thank you very much. And I'll take all of that by myself, and you guys can help me with this other stuff over here. So I think indies have really helped upend that traditional notion of it has to be this way because it's always been this way. And that has been really exciting. But the other part of your question, how else do we find things? We work with a number of small publishers where we sublicense rights. We also get tons of author referrals, which really is kind of the best way. We have authors who say, my friend is starting out, they're really great, you should take a look at their stuff, and we do. And then a way that people who are just starting out and just getting in the door, we have a submission form on our website, which we look at every single day. We also go to tons and tons of author conferences. So ApollyCon, 20 Books, which will now be Author Nation, Book Bonanza, Dragon Con, Thriller Fest, Readers Take Denver. So we're at a number of events as well. So come say hi. We love chatting with authors at those events and getting to know you and learning about your stuff. So come find us.
Amazing. Well, what do you wish that indie authors would do more of when it comes to marketing their audiobooks? Like, do you have any tips to help them market better?
Well, I feel like it starts with your author page. Make sure you have an author bio. You don't need to use your headshot. You can use, a little, initials or something, but you should have an author bio. And somewhere in your book, you should have an email address to reach you. Some authors who use pseudos want to make themselves as unfindable as possible. And that means that audio publishers or agents or film producers can't get a hold of you, which is like really putting yourself at a disadvantage. So make sure you put some email address or some way to find you would be really my very good advice. Also make sure your work description is in good shape and make sure you have put that work in. That really, really helps and really helps the algorithm. Really pay attention to that stuff because if it's a mess, it's going to be a problem for across the board. In terms of traditional marketing, I mean, I think indie authors are so savvy at figuring out their Amazon ad strategy. It's really, really important to, follow all of the good advice put out there by Kindlepreneur and all of these, people who have really, really like learned the system. The thing about Amazon is it changes all the time. So really staying up close to those things. Same thing with Meta. Meta ad strategy obviously changes all the time. But putting in that early investment really, really, really helps, especially in your first couple of weeks on sale. You need to get that momentum going. Also, get yourself in author groups. Get to know your community. The author community is some of the most wonderful, caring, loving people, and they want to help other authors launch into the world. And so, having that, support of other authors to say, look, this new book is amazing. I love this person. They're so fun. Like that is huge for converting. Some people love doing co-writes, and that also brings new audience into, readership that has never been there before. So that is one another way. But I mean, I think those are like these all sound very straightforward, but you'd be shocked at the times that we're just like, you need an author bio. You need to be able to be affiliated with also bots because people want to be able to find you. So, I mean, I think these are some of the things that really kind of give you a really good head start.
Well, let's talk about narrators because picking narrators can be super tricky. Because, I mean, to put it bluntly, a narrator can make or break a book. So, do you have any like tips or tricks? How should all authors look for narrators? Where do they start? And I suppose you could answer this from two perspectives. I suppose a few tips for those doing it on their own, and then I guess from Podium's perspective, like how do you guys pick narrators?
It's great questions. I'll start with the people who are doing it on their own. I think it's really important to make sure that you're working with good actors. There are some bad actors out there on some of the self-publishing audio sites. And so it's important to do your research. I hate using that phrase, but it's important to kind of like do that background work to make sure that they're narrators who are respected in the community and have, done this before. I think that that's key because we've definitely heard some horror stories of people who they sent their money and never got their files. So that's never a good scene. If you are finding somebody great, I would just be really, really particular about your pronunciations because what you hate is at the end of the day when your main character is pronounced, I don't know, Renee, and they pronounced it Rennie or something, and it ruins the entire book for you. That will just You as an author won't promote it in the same way. You'll feel it'll just be, this bad feeling about your baby that you've worked so hard on. So I think just being incredibly intentional about every single pronunciation, even if you think it's obvious, really, really thinking about that stuff. I also think too, people get seduced by the idea of the hot narrator. They're like, ooh, I hear this is the narrator to have on my romance title. I have to have this narrator. And your main character is a Texas motorcycle guy, but you want the hot narrator who is an English actor. And that really leads to some serious dissonance for the consumer because they're like, why does this Texas main character have a slightly English accent and it's very confusing. So I think moving away from the idea of I have to have said superstar and instead saying who is going to do the most incredible job encapsulating my characters, I think is across the board great advice for narrator, for finding the right narrator.
So I completely agree with this. And funny story, when Podium, so I'm sure you'll talk about this in a second, but my experience was Podium sent me a list of narrators. So I went to their websites and played their show reels, and I was so confused by the end. And I'll tell you why. I listen to so many audiobooks that hearing an American accent and hearing an English accent and hearing an American doing an English accent, somebody who spent time in England, or hearing a British person doing it, they all have blurred together. Now, obviously, if I were to speak like this and, it was like the Queen or whatever, I know that it's a very British accent, okay? But, and I know a very American accent. But for people who blend their voices and they narrate and have these swings of voices, it's really hard for me to discern. So I had to play all of the voices to my wife, and my wife was looking at me like, how could you not know that that's not a native British person? Obviously, they're not a British person. Listen to it. And I'm like, what? I can't. How can you tell? And she was like, anyway, so it was actually my wife who picked because we wanted the most British sounding British voices. And so I had to give it to my wife. But I think it's for somebody who listens to audio, like, I mean, I seriously am probably consuming an audiobook every week at this point, on top of reading. I can't tell anymore because I also listen at a higher speed. And so there's like this really, but like you were saying, it's a real dissonance. And then when I heard the narration completed, I was like, oh my God, thank God my wife picked because they're so British, which is exactly what I wanted and exactly how I heard it in my head. I was like, thank God, because if it had have had that American twang, I've been gutted because it would have created that dissonance for me because I wrote it in British English as well. So yeah, I think you're so right, and it is so important. But yeah, maybe from Podium's perspective.
I mean, I think for us, we send, once we've signed a contract, very quickly afterwards, you're going to get sort of author notes collection. And some of our authors are like, I don't know, I trust you guys. I can't be bothered. I don't know. I really strongly recommend the most notes, every kind of note you can give us. Like, my main character is super moody, and I envision him as 6'2" with huge muscles and, really brooding face. And that all of that is super informative for us, because what we do not want is super fans to say, "Oh my God, this character is so wrong. This is so wrong. This is not who I had in my head." And that's happened before. And it's we don't ever we want to avoid that really whenever possible. So I always tell authors, give us more notes than you think is humanly acceptable, because the more information we have and the more of that world that we can, get from your perspective, you're the expert on the world. Even if we read every single page 100 times, we still might not get that same background information about this character that isn't explicit on the page. So I think that is really important. Pronunciations is so important, like I said. But also, I think, to the point earlier of it's not necessarily somebody that you would expect to be the right person to narrate your story. So, there's a really good example. We work with a lit RPG author named Shirtaloon, who's the author of a series called He Who Fights with Monsters. It's been a major bestseller for us. The narrator on that series is Heath Miller, who is has an Aussie accent. Shirtaloon is from Tasmania, so that was, part of the thinking. And there weren't a lot of Aussie lit RPG narrators in the space at the time, but our casting team is so good at keeping tabs on all the new voice actors coming out from all over the world. They said, "Look, this narrator has only 10 credits to their name, but here's a sample. We had them do an audition. We really think this is it." And it's been an unbelievable, massive success story. So I think just having that trust that, once we can really say, "Here are the reasons why, and here we think they, we really think this is the person for the job," I think is really important, because, casting teams are really unbelievable professionals who kind of do this day in, day out, and have that knowledge base to really get the great consumer experience, which is really what we're going for in the end. We want those 5-star reviews, and for the listenership to be like, "Oh my God, you nailed it. This is it. This is so amazing. I love this." That's really what we're going for.
Do
So.
you do, and sort of on the thread of success stories, do you have some success stories you can talk about, maybe of particularly of self-published authors that you've perhaps worked with, and maybe what made those particular audiobooks so successful? Like, was it the marketing? Was it the narrators? Was it a mix of all of it? What can you?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many. So many of our authors are self-published. I mean, I'd still say the vast majority of them are. And so, I think, gosh, I'm trying to think. Stacey Reynolds is one, The O'Brien Tales. It's about an Irish, multi-generational saga. Justine Eyre is the narrator on that one. And, she didn't really know what she wanted, but we, sent her a reel, and it's been just completely blown up in audio. It's just been a massive, happy story. We could go on and on. We work with Hope Holloway, who's in sort of the Floridian late in life romance category, and she totally self-published. And she is. Found, so much happiness with her narrator, has written testimonials and told other authors to come publish with us, because we really worked with her to find the right person. But yeah, I mean, I could go on for days. But really, I mean, we want to work with narrators, and we want to work with pair them with authors that it's just going to elevate the work. It's gonna take the written word to a different place. And so, like I said, the more upfront notes you can give, the happier everyone will be. So, yeah, it's a really it's always makes everybody feel really great when we get those notes back after the MP3s come, and they're like, "Oh my gosh, you guys nailed it. This is it. This is incredible. I'm so happy. I'm crying." Like, that's always, gets us all very teary-eyed when we see emails like that. So.
That's what happened to me when I've only listened to the first two chapters, but obviously I've just received the second book files, and I'm just literally beam when I listen, because it's just so incredible to like, as an, I don't know what it is about it, but it is incredible to see that like translation into a different format, a different medium, and one that you haven't done. I think that's what's so magical about it, is that okay, yes, it's my words, but I had no input to the creation of the audio. And it's just like, I don't know, it's like getting to go to the movie for the first time. Like, it's just amazing. I love it.
Oh, so good.
Okay, what exciting things can we expect to see from Podium in the next 18 months?
Great question. So the first and most exciting is we're moving into and we have moved into an all formats program. So we released 1,800 plus or minus audiobooks last year,
Blimey.
and 105 of them had print, e, and audio. So we now have a distribution agreement with Two Rivers via Ingram for print in stores. So we're very excited to offer that as an author service. And some of our authors have always wanted that opportunity. So that's something that we're very excited about. And our first sell-in list will launch this fall. So
And are you focusing on specific genres?
it's a mix. It's romance, it's lit RPG, it's thriller, it's a mix. So and really, we want to get those books into stores that we know that audiences are most excited about at first, to sort of make sure we're proof of concept, right? Making sure we're knowing what we're doing. But yeah, we're very, very excited, and so that has been a big move for us. And then moving into foreign markets has been another thing that we're very, very excited about. There's just an entire world out there who loves this kind of content and wants to hear it in their own language. So and we do sell internationally in English quite successfully, but we want to make sure that we're exploring those opportunities for those specific authors. So that's been really exciting. Other things, we, like I said, I think some of the things that we think about the most is, every quarter we kind of do debriefs about various initiatives that we've been doing and saying, this is working, this isn't working. So I think taking our learnings from 2023 and applying them and saying, this is the stuff that has been working on the marketing front. This is the stuff that's been working from a production standpoint. So that, and just I was telling you at the front, we just came from an all hands on site. So I think our team is all jazzed up and ready to go for this year. With new initiatives in front of us. So we're very excited.
Amazing. Well, thank you for your time today. This is the Rebel Author Podcast. So tell everyone about a time you unleashed your inner rebel.
Well, I was thinking about this one because I've always been a consummate rule follower, but I would say when I met my husband, he has tattoos and was riding a motorcycle and a big beard and a former professional snowboarder, and my friends were like, "What is happening?" But I think he's really a domesticated suburban dad these days. But I think that scratches my rebel itch, is that I've got this slightly rebellious husband who helps keep me down on earth when I get my type A stuff keeps coming out. It helps me come back down to earth. So
Oh, I love it. Well, tell everyone where they can find out more about Podium and anything else you'd like to add.
yeah, so check us out on podiumaudio.com. We're on socials, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, and X. And yeah, sign up for our newsletter. We send out really fun newsletters and have lots of online author events and are at conferences all around the US. So please come check us out.
Thank you. Thank you for talking to me today.
Absolutely. It's such a pleasure.
And of course, a giant thank you to all of the show's listeners and all of the show's patrons. If you would like to get early access to all of the episodes, you can do so by visiting patreon.com/SashaBlack. I'm Sasha Black. You are listening to Kate Rundy, and this was the Rebel Author Podcast. Next week, I'm going to be joined by Claire Taylor, talking all about the Enneagram and motivations and blockers. But first, I did promise you a little sneak peek at book two, my Game of Romance and Ruin audiobook. So stay tuned and listen for that, and I will see you next week.
On the scale of 1 to this is going to end really fucking badly, I'd say this negotiation is about 3 seconds from screwing me so hard I'll be limping for weeks. But then I've never been one to back down from a deal, and I don't lose negotiations. Except maybe to Morrigan, but that's entirely sex-related. Roman was clear. Negotiate the shipping times, the boat needs to be docked by 6 tomorrow, and he doesn't care what it takes. Of course, doesn't care what it takes is a sign that he cares very fucking deeply, and I had better pull it over the line in the most efficient way possible, so help me gods. "Look, Lenny," I start, a sharp sea breeze curls around the harbour whipping under my white shirt, a line of goosebumps freckle my arms. I'm not sure if it's the wind or the irritation. This deal means more than just Roman's poxy fucking imports. Don't look me, missy. The port is double booked, and unfortunately for you, the other merchant reserved the slot first, so you're just going to have to wait. I sniff, wipe my hand over my mouth. There are very few depths I won't stoop to in order to pull a deal over the contractual line. Scarlet, my twin sister, might be more outwardly competitive, but I'd gut a bitch that got in the way of a negotiation. Lucky for this snivelling dock boy, I don't need to play the Roman card, because I'm pulling rule 3 of being a negotiator. Always have dirt on your clients. Lenny, doll, there's no need to shit the bed over this. I grab him by the shoulders, spin him round and park him on a crate facing the ocean. Then I lean into his ear and whisper, real low and creepy. Now, you listen to me, you son of a bitch. I know you have a nice little pregnant wifey at home. I also know you have a rather regular habit of dropping into a certain club in town for people with particular tastes. He swallows so loud I hear the lump go down. Tastes that include shoving your mangy cock in a bucket of leeches and letting them suck the erection dry. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm pretty sure my wife would take issue with that, especially if she was carrying my kid. I stand up, give him a couple tap-slaps on his cheek. He pales as he turns to face me. You can be a real cunt, Sterling, you know that. I nod sagely. So can divorce. Expensive things, those. About that dock slot? He lowers his head, shaking. The poor bastard is translucent. I'm not sure if he's going to cry or puke. He pulls out a small notebook from his pocket and a pen. The slot is yours, but don't come asking for any allowances again. This is not how I do business, and it's not how you should either. You ought to know better. I always thought you were a legacy magician, not an underworld tramp. He stands. Tall bastard he is. Straggly hair and water-stained shirt half tucked into his trousers. I mean, tramp seems a little strong, Len. I'm just nimble with information. There's no need to harbour bad feelings. He stares at me. That's not funny. I mean, it was a bit. Just trying to lighten the mood. We're all pawns going about our business trying to get the best deals we can. I'll try not to be as much of a cunt next time. I wink and walk off, the smugness already drawing across my lips. There won't be a next time, he hollers. I ignore him. It's a cute thought, but he knows as well as I do. Roman's business is booming, and that means half a dozen ships to dock and unload every week. Whether Len likes it or not, I'll be back in a couple of days, and this charade will start again.
Don't forget to tune in and subscribe on your podcatcher. And when you have a moment, please leave a review.